WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As half the team Cheech and Chong, my guest Tommy Chong became famous in the 70s for comedy performances, records, and movies about getting high on marijuana. Their characters were always stoned and were often being chased by inept cops and narcotics agents. Here's a scene from the beginning of Cheech and Chong's first movie, Up in Smoke. They're in a car when Chong offers Cheech a huge joint, almost the size of a baseball bat. Cheech asks what's in it. Chong responds.
Mostly Maui Wowie, man.
Yeah?
But it's got some Labrador in it.
What's Labrador?
It's dog shit.
What?
Yeah, my dog ate my stash, man. Had it on the table and the little motherfucker ate it, man.
Yeah?
So I had to follow him around with a little baggie for 3 days before I got it back. Really blew the dog's mind.
You mean we're smoking dog shit? Man.
Cheech and Chong starred in 7 films and had 6 comedy albums that went gold. In the mid-80s, Cheech and Chong went their own ways. Cheech Marin has since been in several movies and the TV series Nash Bridges and Judging Amy. Chong has played a stoner on That 70s Show. Now Cheech and Chong have reunited and are working on a new movie. They'll perform at the U.S. Comedy Festival in Aspen this week. And Tommy Chong has a new solo show called The Marijuana Logs. What has helped put him back in the limelight is, of all things, his first arrest on drug-related charges. It was part of a nationwide sweep started by Attorney General John Ashcroft to shut down internet businesses that sold drug paraphernalia. Chong's son had an internet business that specialized in selling bongs made of blown glass. In February 2003, federal agents raided Tommy Chong's home. He pleaded guilty to violating federal drug paraphernalia laws and spent 9 months in prison. A little later, we'll hear from the Justice Department lawyer who prosecuted him. I asked Tommy Chong why he and Cheech have reunited.
Well, I remember the Eagles, they had a Hell's Freezes Over tour. The Eagles once said that they'd never tour again, or they would tour when hell froze over. Well, ours is more like the Cheech and Chong Need Some Money tour. So Cheech, you know, he's got a couple of ex-wives that he has to support, and I have to, you know, make up for all the money I lost during my incarceration time. So it's sort of like a get us financially healthy tour.
Well, you've made your career, you've made millions of dollars doing comedy about marijuana and LSD. Before you were arrested for your son's business selling bongs and pipes, had you ever been arrested for anything drug-related?
I'm very embarrassed to say that I've never been arrested before. It was a burden that I had to carry into prison. You know, People wanted to know why I was there. I had to kind of mumble, you know, cover my mouth and go, bongs. And when they arrested me, they thought for sure. In fact, Bill O'Reilly, you know, the commentator on Fox, he got on Leno one time right after my bust and said that the reason I got jail time was that I was busted for like 17 times, 17 priors, as he put it. But I've never been busted, and they triple-checked that one to make sure. But no, I've never been busted. Well, you know, we got so many fans, like, at the border and cops and everything else, and so whenever they catch me with a little bit of pot, they'd kind of laugh and tell me about how they heard our records and let me go.
Oh, you know, I've always wondered about that, if cops often recognize you, because, of course, in your movies, you're always being chased by cops and, you know, having to hide the largest joint known to man. So tell me more about what's happened over the years when cops did recognize you or you know, border guards recognized you.
Oh, yeah. Well, even coming in, I was just in Toronto with my wife. We were performing, like, we can perform in Canada. You know, I hesitate to perform in the United States, you know, with the Bush people around. But coming back across the border, they recognize me. But we have a lot of border guards. I do it in my act, you know, about how they recognize me and let me go.
You mentioned that they recognize you and let you go. Do you mean that they found things and let you go in spite of it?
Yeah, they found stuff. Okay. Right at the start of the Iraqi war, the first day, we're flying into Sioux City, Iowa, or flying out of it. We performed, my wife and I, and then someone, fan, had gave me this big, beautiful glass bong water pipe, and I had it in my carry-on. And so when it went through the x-ray, you know, it created quite a stir, you know, the cops and everybody gathered around, they're pointing at the bong, you know. And the guy he talked into his lapel, like he called for backup or something, because he had this suspicious-looking water pipe in my knapsack. And then I told him who I was, and he went back to his lapel and said, "Disregard." And then I had some fans, some National Guardsmen, you know, with rifles and everything. They said, "Oh, can we walk to you, escort you to your gate?" And I said, "Sure." And so I got an escort, and, you know, it was great.
Is this the dictionary definition of mixed messages from the authorities?
Well, the authority, in my case, was like one guy, you know, John Ashcroft, you know. And he was responsible for me going to jail for 9 months for basically, you know, something that everybody's still doing it, you know.
My understanding.
And the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say about pot. You know, they've been, this administration and Nixon before them and Reagan before them, all the Republicans, they try to demonize pot. You know, and they put out all these lies. You know, you talk about lying about weapons of mass destruction. The lies they have on the TVs, you know, and the radio and that, all these anti-pot ads, you know, where they even, there's one administration official said that pot smoking is responsible for date rape. Do you believe that?
Well, I might as well ask you, the most famous of the drug ads of the past few years is the "This Is Your Brain on Drugs."
Yeah.
Ad, what'd you think of that ad?
Oh, it's great comedy, you know. I did a T-shirt one time. "This is Tommy Chong on drugs." No, "This is Tommy Chong, and this is Tommy Chong on drugs." And there was absolutely no change in the picture. Because, you know, pot, look, I'm 66 years old. I'm in great health. And even better, because I quit smoking pot. Because pot, you know, smoking anything isn't that great for you, your lungs, you know. And you can eat it now, but I've been clean for like two years. And I can tell you there's no difference. I still get the munchies. I still can't remember stuff. I still act like a pothead, you know. But I'm clean.
Maybe it's permanent damage.
No. For 66 years old, man, I'm, you know, I still act like a teenager. So,
you said it's not
damage.
You said you're not doing marijuana anymore. Did you stop after you were arrested?
I stopped when they started drug testing me.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm in the system now. If I violate my probation, they can put me in jail, basically indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
They can put me back in jail. And then if I violate again, they can give me another sentence, and then pretty soon I'm like three strikes, and pretty soon I could be put away forever.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tommy Chong, and he is most famous for being half of the team Cheech and Chong. And Cheech and Chong are actually getting back together for a performance. They're working on a new movie together. And Tommy Chong has a tour coming up called The Marijuana Logs. Now, my understanding is that there is a law on the books that was rarely enforced that says you can't sell drug paraphernalia. But the people would say, well, this pipe isn't for marijuana, this pipe is for tobacco. Therefore you wouldn't be subjected to punishment. But I think in 1994 there was a court decision that said you could be punished for selling this material if it was used for drugs, whether or not you intended it to be used that way or knew it was going to be used that way?
Determined by a federal expert. To be determined by a federal expert. The law is
I don't understand. What do you mean to be determined by?
Well, what it is anything that could be used to be smoking pot, you know, if you're selling it. Like, for instance, roach clips. You know those alligator clips you get at Radio Shack?
Mm-hmm.
That's considered paraphernalia. If a government witness got on the stand and said, It's my opinion that this was being or could be used for smoking pot. Therefore, you know, it's paraphernalia. It's the law is so ambiguous and so selective. It's just for hippies and, you know, guys like, you know, rappers or, yeah, it's so ridiculous. Like what bamboo papers are, and zigzag papers, they're still being sold in every 7-Eleven in the world, in America. And that's, you talk about, you know, something to be used for smoking pot, cigarette papers. Let's start there, you know.
So your son ran an internet business selling bongs and other pipes and very, very decorative ones, I might say. They were kind of elaborate glass.
They were art. Yeah. Artworks. Mm-hmm. They were works of art. They were done by artisans. The glass work was phenomenal. In fact, the Smithsonian Institute has a collection of glass bongs in their basement. You know, that's how important this art is and will be. Yeah, and my son ran a factory, you know, that created this glass art, and he complied. And by the way, the website was for 18 years and over, and you couldn't buy it. Like they try to say that kids could buy it. Well, no, kids could not buy it. You had to send in your driver's license, and you know, you had your proof, your ID and your proof and your credit card and all that stuff. And we never sold. There were only two states, Pennsylvania and Iowa, where this, where they would prosecute. Everywhere else, they wouldn't prosecute. That's why they had to have, the feds had to get an undercover sting operation going in Pennsylvania. And even then, my company wouldn't send the stuff to them. So what they did, they flew to California in person, went to the factory, bought $5,000 worth of merchandise, and then begged the guy, said, listen, we want to stay here and go to Disneyland or something. So will you just, here, just, you met us, we're cool, send the stuff to our shop. And so our shipper did, and that the rest is history.
So as far as you're concerned, it was entrapment?
Oh, totally. Totally. And I would have walked, you know, they had me plead guilty to, they had me perjure myself in court because they said that, they had me saying that I owned the company and when it was my son's company. They said that it was me that shipped the stuff. I never shipped the stuff, you know. I was just a, you know, frontman. They had my picture on it, that's all.
So why did you agree to that?
Well, because if I didn't agree, they were going to go after my son and my wife. My wife had signed a check, and they said, well, that's enough evidence to put her away for 2 years. And it would be enhanced, because if we went to court then they, and you're found guilty, then they enhance the sentence even more. So rather than to do that, and I also wanted to show how hypocritical this government, the laws are, you know. And because now, thanks to the government and thanks to the charges, I'm more, you know, I'm on fresh air with with you. So I'm more famous now, you know.
My guest is Tommy Chong of the duo Cheech and Chong. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tommy Chong of the duo Cheech and Chong. When we left off, we were talking about his conviction for selling drug paraphernalia. So what happened when you were arrested on February 3rd, 2003?
It was ridiculous. It was so scary in some ways. But the fact that I do movies, I live in Hollywood, you know, and I've been in so many shows, and that felt like a movie, a scene from an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, you know, where these guys bang on my door at 5:30 in the morning. They're DEA agents with visors and flak jackets and automatic weapons and helicopters and Fox News trucks out in front. And they come in my house and bang on my door. I open the door. They come rushing in, running from room to room. It felt like an Iraqi, you know. And they're kicking in the doors, or running, yelling, clear, and they, you know, with their guns pointed at everybody and pointed at me and says, and they kept saying to me, you're not under arrest. It was like Alice in Wonderland. You're not under arrest. And the reason they said that is that they didn't have to give me a warning. I didn't, and I said, I better get a lawyer. And they said, you don't need a lawyer. We'll tell you when you can get a lawyer. It was, and they grabbed all the computers they could find. They grabbed all the bongs they could find, and they didn't. they didn't have marijuana on their search warrant.
Did you so you asked to see the warrant?
Oh, yeah, they showed me the warrant. I couldn't see. I didn't have my glasses on. I'm standing there in my shorts, you know, my little bikini underwear. And there was just my wife and I there. And she was, you know, she's pretty cool. She said, wow, this is just like a movie. And then they screamed at her, this is not a movie. And they tried to intimidate and that, but it didn't work for her. She wasn't intimidated. She said, well.
Now, you know how you said earlier that a lot of cops and border guards have recognized you over the years and have been really, like, delighted to meet you, and they wanted your autograph. Anything like that going on when you're home?
During the raid?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, these were feds, and the only recognition I got, they had a couple of LAPD policemen there. And when they found pot in my place, you know, which was a big surprise, finding pot in Tommy Chong's house, they asked the cops if they wanted to, you know, press charges. And the cops didn't even answer them. They just turned and walked out the door. You know, because, you know, I'm an upstanding citizen, man. You know, there was no reason for this. This was all done for publicity. You know, this is all done, you know. And the reason I got time in jail, I found out later, was that I did an interview and I said that, you know, jokingly, that the only weapons of mass destruction the Bush administration found so far were my bongs. And how true did that turn out to be?
So you think that your imprisonment, your prison sentence was retribution for that comment?
Yeah, part of it, because they brought it up in court. They brought all that stuff up in court. And everything I said to the arresting officer, that was brought up in court. And the prosecuting attorney, she said, in closing statement was that I made movies that glorified drug use, and that these movies will be around for years and years, and the kids are going to watch these movies and get off and become, you know, pot addicts, and therefore I should do time in jail. It was so unreal, so unreal.
So did you expect to get prison time, or did you expect?
No.
What did you expect?
I was in denial. I was hoping I'd get house arrest, you know, because I got a nice house in Pacific Palisades. You know, I was looking forward to hanging around for a year, you know, working on my garden and just swimming in the pool and just kicking back. But, you know, and it's ridiculous. I'm surrounded by lawyers where I live. And so the lawyer across the street from me, he gave me the best advice ever. Yeah, he said, well, do the time. You know, you're not going to beat the feds. Nobody does.
Now, you said that you took the rap to spare your son and your wife from having to do time. Mm-hmm. So what did they say to you about taking the rap?
My wife and my son?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son was, you know, he felt really, really bad, you know, because, you know, he was he was telling me, you know, kind of the brains behind the scheme. But, you know, rather me do time than him. So he went back to school, and he's becoming a lawyer. He's getting a law degree now, so and a business degree. And my wife, well, she's so gorgeous, and we've been together for like almost forever, you know, 30 years. And she was quite upset. But then, you know, she'd never been alone, you know, so she lived alone. She had a single life for 9 months, and she enjoyed it. She really. She got along fine without me. going out to clubs, dance, having a great time, you know, and visiting me once in a while and looking so good. And then because it was such a I don't know, a non-crime, you know, it's like the universe said, don't worry, man, you're going to enjoy yourself. We're going to make everything work for you. You know, karma was good.
Now, part of the idea, according to what one justice official said, was that they wanted to show that even a celebrity was not above the law, that celebrity being you. So what impact do you think that your arrest and imprisonment had on the whole, quote, drug paraphernalia industry?
The business,
yeah.
Well, it made Snoop Doggy Dogg say he quit smoking pot. But, a lot of celebrities, you know, backed away. Totally. Well,
so what was the prison like that you spent 9 months in?
It was a camp. It was like a... But what it was, when you drive up, when you drove up to the camp, it was in near Bakersfield, a place called Taft, and it's the first, the main prison, which houses, you know, the more dangerous people, had barbed wire all around it, you know, walls and very ominous looking place, and they take you in there, you know, and that's what freaked my wife out, because when they took me in there, it was like I was going to be in there. But then they held me in, you know, in a little holding cell for a couple of, about an hour, and then I got in a little pickup truck and we drove around the back where they have a camp, and it's a boundary camp where they have a chalk line around the track around the whole camp, and you just can't go over that chalk line, and so there was no fences and no armed guards, and it was a camp, it was like a sports camp in a way, you know, or a religious camp, because a lot of religious things going on, you know, a lot of different factions, you know, a lot of Catholics. And I got into the Indian religion, the American Indian, the sweat lodge. So we used to sweat every Saturday.
So what were most of the, what were most of the other prisoners in for?
White-collar crimes, a lot of white-collar crimes, a lot of pot growers, you know. They love arresting potheads or pot growers because, you know, now they got people to take care of their gardens, and you know, and we're mellow people, so we're the best kind of model prisoners.
Tommy Chong. Cheech and Chong will perform this week at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen. Chong will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Tommy Chong. He became famous in the 70s as half the duo Cheech and Chong. Their movies and comedy records were about getting high on marijuana. Cheech and Chong have reunited. They're working on a new movie and are performing this week at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen. Chong grew up in Canada, near Calgary. Your father was Chinese and your mother part Scottish, part Irish. So was like ethnic identity an important issue for you when you were growing up?
Oh, big time, you see. Our little town, we couldn't afford any black people or Mexicans. So we had a double for them. So we were the designated, you know, brown people that had to be picked on, you know. So I learned to fight at a very early age. But I was lucky I had a big brother that used to do all my fighting for me. But we grew up, it was a tough childhood, especially with hockey and all that stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in a band called Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers that signed with Motown and had a semi-hit called Does Your Mama Know About Me? So how did you start doing comedy after doing music?
I was in a black band. I was in the only non-black in a black band. And one thing about being in a black, it was a jazz blues band, and there's nothing but comedy in those bands. If you want to hear the best comedy in the world, just hang out with a jazz or blues band, and you will laugh yourself sick. And it was all about comedy, because that's the only way we could get by, you know. Like, we'd play clubs where they don't tell us to... Okay, the band eats in the kitchen. You know, don't mingle with the customers and don't mess with the waitresses. We used to get those kind of orders, you know. But it was, that's how I got my start in comedy. It's just hanging out. And I never talked, you know, when I was in the band. I never hardly said a word. I just listened. And so when Cheech and I got together and then I had to come up with material, I had a lifetime worth of material.
How did you get together?
Cheech was up in Canada during the Vietnam War. He was part of the secret army that was up in Canada just in case a Viet Cong attack from Alaska.
Was he avoiding the draft?
Well, that was part of it. That was part of it. He was just out of university, and he was up there. And I had a, with the Vancouvers and that, we had a couple of nightclubs. We bought a couple of nightclubs because we needed a place to work. And one of the clubs was a strip club where, you know, like, it was actually Vancouver's first almost naked nightclub with the girls naked, that is. And I had seen an improv group called The Committee in San Francisco, and I seen another one called Second City in Chicago, like the original guys. And there again, I got this musician mind. I remembered the bits. And so I started showing them to the actors up in Canada. I put an improvisational group together with the girls. And so we
with
had
the strippers.
Yeah, we had naked improv. It was incredible.
But you weren't naked, were you?
At times, you know, but no frontal stuff, you know. It's too cold up there. And we don't want to blow the myth. You know? So the girls got naked. But, you know, on cue, you know, we'd do little bits called like the pajama party, you know, where they pretend they were in their living room and they change into their pajamas. Very sexy and very funny. And then Cheech joined up halfway through. We needed a straight man. Because I had another partner that had long hair. I had real long hair. And we needed a guy with short hair to play the cop parts, you know. There was always a cop in there somewhere. But Cheech joined the group, and then when the group broke up, as groups do, Cheech and I stayed together, and we were going to form a band, because he's a singer, and I'm a guitar player. And I always thought I was just going to do this improv for a little while and then go back to a band. But then we formed a band, but we never played. We just went out and did comedy and in front of all these rock and roll kids, you know, about a couple of thousand, you know, screaming kids all sat down and watched our comedy. And so I knew that we were going to be very big in the comedy world.
So how did you start doing drug humor?
Well, it was because of the audience, you know. It was the times, and it was the late 60s. And the audience, you know, they were all stoned, so we would just sort of do something they could relate to. And like at L.A., for instance, when we were up in Canada, we didn't even know Cheech was Mexican, because, you know, he had an education and he was speaking, you know, like white guys. But when we come down to L.A. with Cheech and I, we were in a club one night, and we weren't going over. We did one show, and then the second show. It was a dance club. And dancers don't like being interrupted, you know, for comedy. So they weren't that receptive. So I told Cheech, well, you know, there must be a character, you know, that they can relate to. And he said, well, there's one, but it's kind of detrimental to the Chicano population. I said, well, that's what we're doing. That's what we're comedians, man. And so he did it. And from that day on, I knew stardom awaited us. Because first time Cheech goes, hey, man, hey, Red Freak, want a ride, man? We're hitchhiking. And then he talks about his car. Oh, it was magic.
My guest is Tommy Chong of the duo Cheech and Chong. They've reunited and will perform this week at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tommy Chong of the stoner comedy duo Cheech and Chong. In Cheech and Chong movies, you are not famous for being the smartest person. But you are, it seems, quite smart. So did people, were people always surprised that you weren't this, you know, just like totally stoned character like you are in the movies?
Well, I know Bill O'Reilly was a bit disappointed, and probably the judge and probably, you know, the prosecutor when they found out, you know, that I indeed, you know, was not that stoned out guy, you know, never have been. I'm a weightlifter, a bodybuilder, and I was always into bodybuilding. And
you were into bodybuilding while you were making the Cheech and Chong movies?
Totally. You can see I got, you know, some nice guns, as they call them, in the movie, you know, arms. And, you know, I've been weightlifting since I was 15 years old. I was always on the edge, because weightlifting, when I went to school, was banned. The high schools wouldn't allow weightlifting. It said it made you muscle-bound. And, so I've been into weightlifting, you know, practically all my life. And that was one of the reasons I came to L.A. to go to Gold's Gym, the famous Gold's Gym. I wanted to work out with the big guys, which I did. And that's where I met Arnold when he first came over.
Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. Got stoned with Arnold a few times. You want to hear...
I'm going to stop you for a second. Should I be asking you a follow-up about Arnold Schwarzenegger getting high with you? About the governor of California getting high with you? Are we heading in that direction?
Well, it's documented, you know. I mean, Arnold is known for, you know, his early wildlife. Yeah, Cheech and I emceed one of his contests one time. You know, big muscle head thing. I've known Arnold since he got off the boat. And
have you been to the governor's mansion?
Yeah, he doesn't know me now, you know. Oh, Maria will say hi to me, but I know Arnold, you know, he politically can't admit to knowing me, right. Which is cool. No, I understand, you know.
What were you like when you got high on pot, particularly when you started smoking, when you were, what, in your teens?
I was, to me, I thought, I believed a lot of the reefer madness stuff, so it was a very secretive thing, and so I would do it just do a couple of tokes and listen to records, listen to music, and just get totally into the music thing, and be very introspective, you know, just withdrawn and quiet, and very, very, yeah, just totally into music, that's all.
So did you used to get stoned when you performed?
Yeah, at times. Usually the last show of the last night, Cheech and I used to smoke up a little bit, just to make it interesting. But I haven't been stoned for 2 years, and so I do shows now totally straight. And like I say, there's no difference. I still forget everything.
Well, when you were doing your character, was it easier, like in the 60s and 70s, was it easier to do the character when you were straight or when you were high?
Oh, straight. Can't do anything when you're high. Especially movies. Movies is horrible. You got to be straight. Because you got cues, you know. You know. One time, Cheech and I smoked up, and we're sitting in a car. It was a car scene. And the radio says, okay, we're rolling. And for some reason, we were waiting for Let's Go or something. We sat there for about a half hour till the camera. They said, we're rolling. Oh, you know, we burned up too much film. So no. Life is better straight, by the way. It's so much better straight. But if you need to smoke, then that's another matter.
Your son owned the bong business that you served 9 months for.
Yeah.
When your son was young, what did you tell him about drugs and about your drug history? I mean, there's no way, when your father's Tommy Chong, there's no way of escaping. Like, your father smoked pot. I mean, you don't have to guess about that. Your father definitely smoked pot.
Well, his father's character in the movie, there was a big difference. There was a big, in my house, mm-hmm, a big mm-hmm, difference, you mm-hmm. know. I mean, I, the headband came off when I went home.
Right.
And the thing is about my kids, all my kids, you know, Radon and Robbie and Precious, all my daughters, they made up their own mind. Robbie was funny. Radon, one time, I had to get called to school because the teacher, you know, found her and her girlfriend or some, they had a bag of pot at a grade school, Wonderland School. And so they wanted to see the father. And at the time, I was at the height of the career. I had the longest hair. And I was the stoner. And so my ex-wife's boyfriend was blind. Gordon DeWitty, he's a musician. And so Gordon and my ex-wife showed up. And then I showed up. And I almost got in a fist fight with the father of one of the girls that was accused, because he's a lawyer, and he started telling the teacher that, well, it was Radon did it. And I said, hey, just a minute, man, you know, give her a day in court, you know, let's hear her side. And he starts cussing me, and I start cussing him. I'm ready to smack at the crap out of him. And my wife's boyfriend, he sidles up to me blind, and he grabs me and goes, go ahead, man, you go home, I'll take care of this. So my kids, you know, I never did ever. Well, yeah, I did. My youngest boy, I caught him smoking cigarettes. None of my kids smoke, you know. I think my daughter smoked, but she was in private school in Europe, and so I didn't know anything about it. But I would not allow them to smoke cigarettes or drink, you know, to excess. And none of them did. But my youngest boy, I caught him smoking. He was 12. I went down to pick him up. Because what happened when Cheech and I broke up, I had all this time on my hands, and so I used to drive all my kids to school and back every day. And that was one of my proudest moments in my life, that I got to hang with my sons anyway, every day for all the time they were in school.
Cheech and Chong split up in 1986. Why did you split up?
Well, I joke about it, but it's kind of true, too. I didn't even know we were broken up till I went to the last Cheech and Chong movie and I wasn't in it. And I still have fans say, you know, my favorite Cheech and Chong movie, you know, my favorite movie of yours is Born in East L.A., and I was not in that movie. We broke up. The string had run out, you know, everybody, you know, from Sylvester Stallone, Madonna, everybody, you have a string of hits, Michael Jackson, everybody, you got the Beatles, you don't stay on top forever. Because what happens, you do 3, 4, 5, and then you start competing against yourself. And now you're 5, 6, 7 years older than your first thing, and you don't have that kind of energy. But Cheech and I, we ran out. That was it.
So, you know, the Cheech and Chong characters are going to be in their 60s in your new movie. So what are these characters going to be like?
Well, the title, the working title that I like is Grumpy Old Stoners. I think that's about it. In fact, I can tell you a little bit about it. Cheech has got a problem because when we hook up, you know, he's getting kicked off these movies, you know, because he doesn't look like Cheech and he's bald. So he's having a problem with his age, you know. Me, I'm still living with my mother, who is the biggest pothead, but I'm on probation, so I can't smoke pot. Cheech's health stops him from smoking pot, so we come up with this solution where it's a salve, you know, like a lotion, and it's pot based, and it's magic because it doesn't show up in the drug test, and it gets you just as high, if not higher. And it's all the good stuff about pot, you know. It's all the mind altering substances, and so if you're mean and evil, it turns you into mild and sweet, and so that's part of the plot. And then there's, you know, we're being chased by Stadenko again, the cop, and we're going to introduce a couple of the. We did a movie called Things Are Tough All Over, where we played a couple of Arabs. And so we're going to play those Arabs. We're going to bring those Arabs back because of all this mess in the Arab world. And so these two guys are back, Habib and Sulaiman. And these guys the reason they're staying in the country is because they're under surveillance by the FBI. And they open a company where they sell surveillance equipment. Because every time they find the surveillance equipment, they take it out and they put it in their shop and sell it. And then the FBI people have to put the new stuff in. It's a big fun fest movie. It's going to be great.
Have you ever thought about how many times you've said the word man in your career?
We used to do manectomies in our records. We had to take them out because it was every other word was man. Hey, man, you know what I mean? Man, hey, man, hey, man, what are you doing, man? And some of the records, we'd go in there and just take out the mans just so there wouldn't be so many of them. quite a few. In fact, that's what I call my character, Pedro and Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Tommy Chong, thanks so much.
Thank you, dear.
Tommy Chong is about to tour his new solo comedy show, The Marijuana Logs. Cheech and Chong will perform this week at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen.